This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, we all know now that the recall election, the petition for the recall has failed. They didn't get the number of signatures required for certification. The response has been interesting. The mayor announces that she intends this in the rearview mirror. And at the same time, she announces that she will reveal more of her thoughts about the recall process, not from the podium, but rather in a book that she describes as having a number of chapters but no title. I don't know about you, but I kind of believe it would be better described as a comic book, maybe titled How to Excel at Being Inept for Dummies. Here to talk about these issues and others, Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL-TV political analyst. Clancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. It's always fun and enlightening to be on your program. Good morning to you and your listeners.
So, your thoughts about the recall and what was revealed on Wednesday?
You know, there are so many takeaways here. I think the two biggest ones are, number one, we all got a huge civics lesson out of this. I'm not taking sides, although, you know, I've been a critic of the mayor for quite some time, but we all got a civics lesson because, you know, people have heard the term recall, they kind of know what it means, but mechanically, I'm going to use that word, mechanically, it requires a lot of parts, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that have to sync up. And it is not unlike, and this is a conversation you and I had a little over 6 months ago, six and a half, maybe 7 months ago now, when they filed the petition with the Secretary of State. We both agreed that, you know, to succeed at this, you have to think of it as a campaign. You have to mount a campaign that's every bit as organized and every bit as well-funded and every bit as coordinated as a campaign for citywide office. And if you're trying to recall a mayor, you effectively have to mount a mayoral campaign against the sitting mayor. And that's what they didn't do, but we learned just how difficult it is. Over $1.2 million that we know of was spent on this thing, and they still came up way short. Now, there are some questions about the disqualification of 99.9% of the second batch of petitions that were dropped off, but the registrar is making things available this afternoon, and I'm told she's going to make a statement about, you know, the process that was used. And I did some research, and I'm sure you have too. You know, there's a provision in state law that sort of spells out the process for this. And, we can go deeper in the weeds later about that second tranche, and I'm sure you're curious about that, as a lot of people are. But we got a big civics lesson on this, you know, that there are rules and there are laws that most people are generally aware of what the law is on certain things, but this is something that I'll confess I did not know until the Times-Picayune sought copies of the petition under the state law, because that I did not know that a recall petition is public record the minute you put your name on it. Now, personally, I don't think it should be a public record at that point. I think it should be ultimately a public record. That's just my opinion. But the law is the law. We have to follow the law as it is, not as we would like it to be. And, you know, the recallers made a lot of amateurish mistakes, which if you support the recall, that's a real shame because, you know, they were going after a mayor who's made a lot of mistakes. And by the end of this process, and this is one of the takeaways, you know, it was like it's a clown car show on both sides. You know, the effort to remove her was every bit as disjointed as the mayor's administration. And if you're going to take out somebody like a mayor, even a mayor who's riddled with scandals and mistakes and bad decisions, you still got to be professional because any incumbent mayor in a city like New Orleans is still a powerful force. So, and then the other takeaway is the big takeaway is the state legislature, which controls the law on recalls, needs to do a deep dive into the law. The law is okay as far as it goes. The things that it addresses, I think it addresses with specificity, but there are a lot of areas in this recall effort exposed the gaps in the law where the law is basically silent across a wide array of things. And I'll quickly touch on some of them. The relationship between the Secretary of State and local registrars. Who's the dog and who's the tail? It's not clear. Most people don't know that the registrars of voters, all of them, are appointed for life. Now, that's the kind of thing that the U.S. Constitution gives only to federal judges. Here we have local officials being appointed for life, and that's the law. Now, it could change, and I'm not saying it should. I'm not saying it shouldn't, but it should at least be discussed. Let's do a deep dive. Let's see what other states do.
Sure.
And I think the lifetime appointment was in the thinking behind that was it would take this person out of the political realm. Maybe, maybe not. I have learned over the years, and I think you would agree with this, every decision you make in life, but especially every decision in politics and governance, it's a double-edged sword. There's nothing that's all good or all bad. Well, very few things are all good or all bad. And there are pluses and minuses to that theory of appointing someone for life. But anyway, but the other thing is, who's in charge of removing a registrar if he or she doesn't do his or her job? And there's at least a prima facie evidence out there, case out there, that Dr. Sandra Wilson, the Orleans registrar, has not really done a good job of maintaining the roles of active voters in New Orleans. They've got thousands and thousands of people, according to at least one respected political consultant's deep dive into it, possibly 30,000 or so people on there who should be on the inactive list and ultimately should be purged because they died or moved, or haven't voted in years and years. And the state law is very specific about that, and it doesn't look like it's been followed. So they need to.
You would agree that's all wrapped up in this political ideology of voter suppression. The mayor, I'm glad the mayor is continuing her lawsuit, quite frankly, I think it's going
to
flush out all the issues that you just described.
And it needs to be clarified. Well, her lawsuit is on, let me think, there's so many lawsuits flying around.
Well, the one relative to what Kyle Ardoin did, you know. On that issue, but my information is that was based on the results of the previous canvass where this registrar didn't take the necessary actions, the appropriate actions as a result of the findings of the previous canvass. And, you know,
he corrected what he believed was a mistake, but the law doesn't specifically address that. The law gives him authority to pick the number when the recall petition is filed. It's silent as to whether he can revise that number based upon subsequent information and evidence. I think, you know, you can make an it'd be a good moot court.
Well, but I think the law assumes that the precursor work done by the registrar of voters has actually been done. There are a lot of assumptions that are there.
So you can, but I mean, you can make an argument on both sides. You can make an argument, hey, the law doesn't authorize him to do this. But you could also argue that if the law gives him the authority to decide what the number is, it implicitly gives him the authority to revise it based upon evidence. So it's a good argument in either direction. The courts need to clarified, or perhaps the courts could also punt and say, we're going to rule this way, whatever way they rule, but the legislature really needs to step in and make a statement about that. And the law, and I still don't know the answer. The law puts in there, when it defines the registrar's duties with regard to maintaining the rolls, it specifically says failure to do this is malfeasance. But who removes the registrar? I've heard different people opine on it, and I haven't had a chance to look it up in the law. The city council appoints the registrar when there's a vacancy, but it's an appointment for life. So Dr. Wilson was appointed in 2006, and there's the only person who's still on the council is Oliver Thomas. Nobody else was on the council back then, from the present council. So, you know, we need to look at all. That's one thing that they need to look at. They need to look at revising, you know, this 5-day grace period thing. They need to look at the public record aspect. They need to look at the threshold.
Well, the 5-day grace period is that's a joke. I mean,
there's nobody else in the country that I know of that does it.
And I think it's in place to benefit not the citizens. I think it's to benefit the candidate or the elected official, because it gives them an opportunity that they would have standing for an additional 5 days if this thing is going in a direction that they don't like or against their interests. They get an additional 5 days to go run into court to do something. And
well, not only that, but it gives them a chance. Think about this, Neil. Your background is in elective office and in law enforcement. There are scores of small communities in Louisiana that have, and I'm not picking on police chiefs, but a police chief is a very important position, a very powerful position. Let's just say some small town of, you know, Dubosville or Normanville has a police chief who's a bad guy.
Sure.
You know, and they only got like 1,500 voters, and they want to recall them. If it's a public record, the minute somebody signs it, he can start knocking on doors.
Absolutely.
Can start writing DUI tickets and intimidate people. Now, I'll tell you, I've given this some thought, and I'm not suggesting that this is the one and only solution, but I would revise the law along these lines. I would say that it is not a public record until the registrar is finished with the validation and invalidation process. And instead of a 5-day grace period for people to change their minds, I would require the registrar to publish the entire list online and in the official journal, which would make the newspapers very happy. And I know you don't like that law, but it would be a chance for, you know, a written record of everybody.
I am totally fine with that law.
Publish that out there. And give like somewhere at least 15 days, maybe 30 days for voters. You know, if you want to do an audit of the validation process, the best audit is to let voters look at it. And then if your name is on it as signing it and you didn't sign, you can say, hey, I did not sign that. Somebody faked my signature. Or if you signed it, so say I signed it, because neither one of us signed it. But if I signed it and it has me invalid, I can say, hey, wait a minute, I did sign it. What's wrong with it? That is my birth date. That, you know, this is my ward and precinct. But it's, oh, well, we didn't think it was your signature. Well, you can fill out a form in the form of an affidavit or something that you don't necessarily have to get notarized. You just get a witness and either scan it and email it in or call them and, you know, do something to say that I did. So they can then correct it, but only the voters can. And then there'll be a final accounting of it. And we'll know. To me, that's the better way to do it.
And I agree, because I've had a lot of texts of a lot of people call and say, look, I signed it. I want to make sure they've counted my vote. Mm-hmm. And I want them to tell me if it was discounted. I want them to tell me why.
Exactly. And that's what they should do. When the registrar would publish this list, he or she would say, this is the, and they would put a, you know, like a, they could use footnotes or whatever, but A, B, C, D, E for the reasons, you know, signature did not match or whatever, or, you know, date was wrong or no witness or whatever, you know, and they need to explain why each one was invalidated. And I hope it would satisfy my friends in the news media about public records, because it, making it public record from day one exposes this to intimidation.
Well, it's a vote. I mean, it's really an expression of desiring that there be a vote. And we, you know,
right.
The state law treats it as though it's a proposition. We don't reveal,
right,
you know, whether people are voting up, down, or otherwise in propositions. And again,
right,
this all works to the benefit of the candidate to go out and reach out,
right,
to people and, you know, try and change their mind and remove it in that 5-day period. You know, it's all ripe for abuse. Quite frankly,
yes.
If it didn't cost so much money and you filed this petition, I'd like there to be two dozen voting booths. You go in, we follow what we do for elections, and we vote whether or not we want to recall election or not. You know,
that's an interesting
idea. And that way we use this, you know, the sacrosanct nature of the way that we conduct elections. If we want to be serious about this, now it's not as convenient as going to the, you know, a neighborhood corner and signing a petition. I get it. But, you know, if that's the balance,
feel strongly enough about it, they'll do it. You know?
Absolutely. And that would be the balance of interest. We'll continue this conversation with Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL-TV political analyst. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.